On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. We're checking in with the nonprofit, nonpartisan advocacy group Forward Latino, working on policy issues at home here in Wisconsin and 28 other states. According to Unidos U.S., about 1 million Hispanics turn 18 each year and become eligible to vote. Join in on the Hispanic electorate. Key policy advocacy priorities, 800-642-1234. Daryl Morin is national president of Forward Latino and leads the 80% Coalition. That's an organization urging state and federal lawmakers to pass gun control legislation. Daryl, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. It's great to be here with you this morning.
Good morning. Let's start with gun laws by reflecting on Uvalde 3 weeks ago. Most of the young children who were killed, as well as the two teachers, were Latino. What did this massacre cause you to think and feel?
Well, I think myself and probably every other American in the country harken back to the days of El Paso. When we saw another tremendous tragedy happen imposed upon, you know, the Latino population. But, you know, more than anything, it was frustrating and it was upsetting because for those folks who seem like, you know, seems like we have a school shooting every week, they're right. Actually, it's happening more than once a week now. So it's really beyond time that we take urgent steps to resolve these problems.
What steps have you been taking? What have you been working on, especially in the week since Uvalde?
Well, you know, following El Paso, we held a vigil and we were here in Milwaukee and Milwaukee Southside. And we were surprised when all these organizations from all around the state and even down in Illinois came on up to participate. And it was in that time we were approached by a number of religious leaders of different faiths saying, you know, as a people of faith, it's not enough for us to pray, but we must act. And that's when we put together this organization called the 80% Coalition that's calling for two definitive measures in any gun violence prevention measure.
You talk about the El Paso shooting, and that was 2019, the Walmart in El Paso, 22 deaths. And, you know, there was this Pew survey that was done about 5 months after El Paso. Nearly 7 in 10 Hispanic voters, 68%, said gun laws should be stricter than they were at the time of the survey. And I'm just wondering, when lawmakers aren't responding to public opinion or are moving opposite of what the polls are saying, how do you deal with that?
It's really difficult because what we're seeing nationally is we're seeing a wave of state legislatures that are strong proponents of gun rights, passing measures that aren't necessarily have the support of their constituency in those states, such as passing concealed carry without a license permit. So we see that there's certain legislatures doing the exact opposite of what their constituency is calling for. The whole reason we're called the 80% Coalition just because here in Wisconsin, you know, 80% of all Wisconsinites, and that makes up Republicans and Democrats and gun owners and non-gun owners, they all want universal background checks so that violent felons can't go online and buy a firearm. 81% want these red flag laws so that if law enforcement or a family member knows somebody's in imminent danger to themselves or others, that they could petition a court to temporarily remove that firearm. This, you know, from a voter's perspective, this is a bipartisan thing. It's just in the legislatures, certain state legislatures, we seem to be getting hung up.
Daryl Morin, president of Forward Latino, with us, leader of the 80% Coalition, both based in the Milwaukee area, as we discuss policy agenda issues, what these organizations are working on. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's take a call now. Steve is with us from Sun Prairie. Steve, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Yeah, you know, this whole thoughts and prayers thing is just getting so old. We need someone with some type of leadership to push that we need to stop any federal dollars from going to any school district that does not allow concealed carry. I don't care what you say, providing soft targets is just leading these wolves to the sheep. We need to save these kids' lives. Why won't we support concealed carry in schools?
Steve, thank you. And Daryl, what is your position there?
Well, the coalition's discussed this, and I can share that while I appreciate the gentleman's passion, we're in absolute opposition. We believe that schools should be a place of welcome, of learning, et cetera, that teachers should be focused on that. And just to highlight something, you mentioned earlier what happened in Uvalde, a great tragedy where so many young, innocent lives were taken. That was a school district that actually had gone so far to create its own police department and to arm those, their own police officers, to keep the school safe. And while I think we can look on that now and say that that effort wasn't as successful as everybody thought it would be.
Our Republican-controlled legislature had passed a bill earlier this year that would have allowed license holders to have guns in their vehicles on school property, and Governor Evers vetoed the bill. In this political climate, how have your group's gun control recommendations been received?
Well, there's no one solution that's going to resolve this problem. Mm. So our coalition has taken the stance that we're really calling for two things. One is to have universal background checks so that violent felons can't go to a private seller or even go online and purchase a firearm, which sadly is happening every day here in Wisconsin and around the country. And the second thing we're calling for the state to pass a red flag law. And the technical term for it is an extreme risk protection order. And here's another example. I hate to keep coming back to El Paso, but it's happened here and elsewhere, but most people are familiar with that incident. The mother of the El Paso shooter called local law enforcement more than 2 weeks before that tragedy occurred. Mm. And she pleaded with law enforcement to remove the AK-47 from her son. And they said, ma'am, is he 18? She said, yes. They said, is he a convicted felon? She said, no. They said, then there's nothing we can do. We do not have a red flag law here in Texas. And we saw how that turned out.
What are you watching for on the federal level for gun legislation that could have an impact here in Wisconsin?
Well, we welcome what we're hearing so far. Nothing has been passed yet. But we're hopeful, and we welcome the bipartisan communication that's finally happening. It seemed over all these years that regardless of the number of lives, innocent lives lost to gun violence, nothing had happened. So we're so grateful both parties from both sides of the aisle have come together. We're encouraged by some pieces of legislation, but once again, I think it's hard to say it's everyone's doing all they can if we continue to leave the loopholes in place that allow violent felons to purchase firearms online. And then number two, while we're grateful that at least from the framework we're hearing, that it supports grants that will help fund red flag laws implementations, it doesn't necessarily put red flag laws in place, and we know that is something that's desperately needed.
Daryl Morin, national president of Forward Latino, with us earlier this month. He joined Democratic state lawmakers calling for Republicans to act on universal background checks, as we've been talking about, and a red flag law. Join in what you think will unite and empower the Latinx community on ballot box issues. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Daryl Morin here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with the head of the nonprofit, nonpartisan advocacy group Forward Latino that works on coalition building to lift up the Hispanic community, give voice on a range of policy issues, join in on Latinx economic and political priorities, challenges here in Wisconsin, and, you know, heading into the midterms on gun legislation. 800-642-1234. Daryl Morin, president of Forward Latino, with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Patty now in Rice Lake. Patty, hi, go ahead.
Hi. I'm not disagreeing with, you know, better universal background checks. I'm not disagreeing with that at all, or the red flag. Daryl made a comment that not one thing is going to fix this stuff. And that's true. So that just the law is changing with a universal thing, if background checks is not going to change it. You need to do multiple things, and I'm including carry for the teachers or the staff or whoever in the schools to protect these kids. The second thing is the people that are getting guns are not getting them from the stores. They're not walking into a store and buying them. They're getting them from the black web, the black, markets. Criminals are not buying them.
Patty, thank you.
From a regular place.
Patty, thank you. Daryl, go ahead.
Yeah, and she's absolutely right from the perspective of, yes, when people attempt to go and purchase a firearm who are convicted felons from a registered firearms dealer, the firearms dealer is required to do a background check on them to see if they're eligible to own a firearm. When they find they're not, they're able to go to private dealers or even to go online. Some of the internet's most prolific advertisers are actually these online firearm sales sites. So that's where they're able to do it. And there's no criminal liability for the individuals who do that, because that is one of the loopholes in the current background check legislation we have. So that's why we see that as a critical component in any serious gun violence prevention effort, that universal background checks need to be in place.
Moving on to hate crimes, last week we saw a Milwaukee man receive a 10-year prison sentence for throwing drain cleaner in the face of a Peruvian U.S. citizen outside a restaurant. And this 2019 incident was prosecuted as a hate crime. Should prosecutors be charging hate crimes more aggressively?
Well, I'll say unequivocally, yes. That being said, the pragmatist in me knows that's a very hard thing to actually prove. And with so many budgets constrained in the judicial system, I really have to tip my hat to District Attorney Chisholm and his office for bringing those charges and for getting the conviction there. I'll never forget when I received a call from the sister of Mayud Velez. He was the victim in that just horrendous acid attack, requesting assistance. I think it was very telling that when the trial was concluded, that the attacker had said, I'm still afraid of him. I'm still afraid of him. Mm. And Mayud said, I forgive him, but I just want him to acknowledge that what he did was wrong. Mm. And he wasn't even able to get that. We've just seen a huge spike in hate crimes against, our community over the last 4 years. And Mayud, sadly, was one of those victims.
How is Forward Latino working on this issue, working on the issue of hate crimes?
Sadly, we had to develop a whole protocol on how we service hate crime victims, from making sure that them and their families are safe to getting them the medical and mental health treatment that they need, financial resources to carry them over while they transition and get the therapy they need, et cetera, as well as working with legislators and others. Another case we got deeply involved in was when Natalia Miranda, 14-year-old, Hispanic girl walking to school, American citizen. A person in an SUV, a female in her SUV, stopped at a red light, sees her, and decides to punch it, jump the curb, and literally, as she's running, trying to run away from the car, keeps turning and swerving until she successfully runs her over. Mm. And she told police she did it because the girl was a Mexican. Mm. Miranda and Mayu, those are two examples of people who were willing to come forth, but so many aren't. And for that reason, while we render assistance to many, you hear of so few of them, because understandably, they're fearful that there's going to be, more personal attacks coming if they speak up and report it.
Let's turn to immigration. You are set to travel to Brownsville, Texas, I understand, on the U.S.-Mexico border to get a look at the crisis there. What do you want to learn?
Well, we continue to see and hear so much from folks who have their set agendas. And while we have a policy in place, we want to go down and we want to hear from those folks who want to seek asylum to come to the U.S., who are fleeing persecution and war and crime. We want to hear from the Border Patrol agents themselves and from local city officials there, as well as relief agencies. So, you know, we can make sure that our policy is the most up-to-date and effective one possible. Whenever we close our minds and put our blinders on to only one position, we do, you know, everyone, we do humanity and we do our country a great disservice. So we're looking forward to doing that here next week.
How can the trip shed light, inform the issues Hispanic immigrants face in Wisconsin, especially migrant workers?
Well, boy, there's so many different levels to that question. Mm. Wisconsin is so dependent on immigrant labor. And, you know, our elected leaders know this, even some that have taken recently opposing positions to it in their campaigns. But from, you know, our dairies that use almost exclusively immigrant labor to manufacturing and more, we know the easiest way to out of some of the economic challenges we're having right now is to fix our broken immigration system. So we could finally have a policy that not only meets our security and economic needs, but allows us to maintain our mantle as being the defenders of human dignity.
Daryl Morin with us, president of Forward Latino, as we discuss priorities of his organization and policy positions. You can join in along the way, 800-642-2234. Daryl, you mentioned how the migrant worker community is such an integral part of the agricultural economy here in Wisconsin, especially on dairy farms. How are you approaching and working on better pay, better working conditions?
Well, we continue to work with different government and nonprofit agencies, and we've done this through Republican and Democratic administrations, you know, but we continue to really push on the need to fix our broken immigration policy. And I'll give you two prime examples right now that are used to create great division, which really don't exist. At Congress's direction, the Internal Revenue Service actually created a complete system by which undocumented immigrants are to pay taxes, and usually they're forced to pay taxes at a higher rate. Anyone today can call the 1-800 number at the IRS and say, I'm undocumented, how do I pay my taxes? And they'll walk you through that process. Now, when you hear so many people, particularly certain elected officials, talk about the issue, they never seem to mention that. And they just simply talk about individuals who are taken from the system, who are actually contributing dollars to the system and not eligible for the benefits in the reverse direction. Secondly, if you were to go to the Selective Service homepage, you will see there, and it is federal law, that if you're undocumented and you're a boy or you're a male and you turn 18, you have to pledge to defend the United States and register with the Selective Service if called upon. So these are some of the things that just show how broken our federal immigration system is and the need really to put reforms in place.
Are you working on immigration across organizations? I'm wondering if you're collaborating, as I think about, you know, the United Migrant Opportunity Services, and that's a Milwaukee area organization trying to improve employment and education, health and housing for migrants. Where's the synergy and collaborations on this work?
So we work closely with UMOS, who's led by just an outstanding human being and a great leader, Luper Martinez. He's their president, CEO, to so many other organizations, not just here in Wisconsin, but across the country, United Farm Workers, and so many more. So there is a need to make sure that, you know, above and beyond the immigration reform that's needed, that everybody receives equal access to workplace protections. Sadly, we saw during the pandemic, we saw essential workers going into particularly meatpacking plants that had much of their liability waived at the executive level, at the federal executive level, only to see so many, so much loss of life there. So we continue to effort that. Something that is continuing to be troubling for so many of us.
We only have a few seconds left here, but I'm just wondering, I mean, we're talking about so many competing priorities. How do you decide what is on top and what is your focus?
Yeah, it really is a challenge because everybody has limited resources. But today, it really is immigration reform, economic empowerment, gun violence prevention, And you know, workplace safety. It's it can be overwhelming at times, but we're great. We're lucky to have a great team here and have great collaboration with so many partners, both here in Wisconsin and around the nation.
Daryl, thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Daryl Morin is president of Forward Latino. Ahead on the State Capitol Report, the editor of WisPolitics joins us to talk about developments with the State Elections Commission, the contempt of court ruling against Michael Gableman's office of special counsel. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update is next here on the Ideas Network.